些初中同学应该是认识的。
All right, well, welcome. Welcome to the last session of the Ministry Lift Small Group Ministry Conference. Hopefully it's going to be a good one as we learn together, grow together, and hopefully acquire some knowledge, skills for helping our small group ministry, our small groups to grow. What I want you to do is just to take a few moments in your small group here at the conference, in your table group, to answer the question, how have you seen small groups grow or not grow? Okay, so what has been your experience with seeing small groups grow numerically in terms of size? Okay, so let's just take a few moments to talk about that, your experience in small group growth. I put them on the chair in the back there. Yeah. Let's take another minute or so to discuss these factors. I put the wrong PowerPoint up there. Yeah. Okay, if we could come back together as a large group. I apologize, I had the wrong PowerPoint slides up. That was from yesterday. I was about to do the same presentation as yesterday. This is the right one here. So this is what happens when you try to present at a conference that you're coordinating. You sometimes lose track of what you're doing. four strategies for growing your small group. It's interesting, you know, when you ask the question, what makes small groups grow? I mean, you talked about it just now. Some of the things that you've seen that have worked, some things that you've seen haven't worked. Many churches we know have small groups. So that was why, one of the reasons why I was thinking a conference on small group ministry would be good. Because most of us try to do it. We try to have small group Bible studies. And in the back of our mind or the front of our mind, somewhere, we're thinking that it would be good for these groups to grow, right? To add new people, you know, to see people come to know Jesus, to become a part of the group, maybe others in the church who aren't part of a small group to become part of a group, and to eventually perhaps get to the point where we're going, wow, you know, we don't fit in this living room anymore. Maybe we should start another group. All right, so that's kind of the notion behind this whole idea of numerical growth. And I want to just preface this whole discussion in this session with the comment that numerical growth is not nearly as important as spiritual growth. All right? I mean, let's get that straight. Spiritual growth is the focus of our small groups. But I think we're also concerned about reaching lost people, about enfolding people who are maybe new to our church to be a part of a vibrant community. That's important too. And when we're doing that well, our groups will increase in size. And we will be in a point where we're going, wow, you know, maybe we do need to think about starting another group. Okay, so those are, I wanted to make sure that we're clear on that. I'm not a numbers kind of guy as the final focus. But today we're going to be talking about numerical growth as an important part of our small group ministry when we're focused on ministry to others. So many churches have it. They maybe are inspired by a biblical model, principles. They're motivated by practical reasons, church health and growth. Maybe they see small group ministry as a good place for discipleship, outreach, assimilating new people into the church. Some have seen wonderful results. I think we've probably heard some of the success stories. Willow Creek, or Saddleback, actually, is one I was thinking of, where they claim to have more people in small groups than would come on to a worship service. I mean, they've done something there where they've embedded it in the culture. Small group is vitally important. And yet many churches have struggled, are struggling, and will likely continue to struggle with their small group ministry. As I've observed small groups in many different places, churches, what I'm seeing is that a lot of small groups have hit a plateau, or a ceiling would be a better way of saying it, perhaps, and they can't seem to get above that, right? And there's a number of reasons, and this conference has been built around those reasons. So as you maybe were here in the last block with me, as we talked about building intimacy, that's one of the reasons why some groups hit a plateau or a ceiling is they're not going deeper with one another. All right? And another one will come out today, and you've been exposed to others in other sessions as well. All right, so you've already answered the question, how have you seen your small group grow or not grow numerically? What I'm going to be sharing with you is some of the research coming out of this book, Small Groups, Big Impact, Connecting People to God and One Another in Thriving Groups. 2011 book, so it's recent study. 3,000 small group leaders from some 20 countries and over 200 churches were surveyed and were a part of this study. And you can get the scientific jargon there if that's important to you, what was involved in making it happen. Some of the results were expected, and yet some were actually very surprising. And I think you'll be a bit surprised as we look at some of the results. So what characteristics and behaviors of leaders really matter in terms of growth of a small group? That's what the study was focusing on. You know, they could have studied other factors, but they chose to study the leader. What difference do certain characteristics of the leader make in terms of this group growing in size? Okay? So that's where we're headed today. And if you just realized you're in the wrong workshop, feel free. I won't be offended. Don't worry about it. There's handouts in the back there on the chair if you need a handout. If we all of a sudden run out, just let me know because I have someone out there who can make extra copies for us. Okay, it looks like there's still a few there. Okay. The underlying assumption is this. If groups want to be successful long-term, so long-term success, they must draw people to Christ, successfully assimilate those people into group life, and launch or create new groups. Okay, so that's the assumption here that we're moving into as it relates to the research. And so here you've got the focus in on conversion growth, assimilation, and multiplication as the three key dimensions of growth that we'll be looking at. All right, question and quiz time here. I want you in your small groups to answer the question, small group leaders whose groups grow most rapidly are married, you answer yes or no in your group, younger, well-educated, and so on. All right, so take a couple minutes to go through those questions. All right, just another minute or so to finish up the quiz, and then we will grade your quiz. Done? Yeah? Got everyone answered? Come on, give me some head action here. Everyone? Yeah? Nodding off? It looked like you were nodding off there a second. All right, let's see what the survey says. These things do not matter. Gifted teacher does not matter when it comes to numerical growth of your group. Gifted in evangelism. You don't have to be gifted in evangelism for your group to grow numerically. Not even outgoing or well-educated. What does matter is spending more time with God. Praying consistently for group members. Spending more time praying for group meetings. Yes. Spending more time preparing the lesson for their meetings. No. Does not impact growth in your group in terms of numbers. Isn't that a little bit surprising? Did anybody actually put no for that one? Okay, a few of you did. A lot of you put yes, that you would think that the more time you as a leader spend preparing, the greater the impact will be in terms of numerical growth. Now, it may have impact in other ways. Let's not undermine the importance of preparation, but in terms of the group growing, it according to this study, doesn't. Praying consistently for non-Christian friends, yes. When the leader does that, it has an impact on the growth. Modeling and encouraging friendship evangelism, yes. Encouraging caring relationships, Fun activities, absolutely. Spending time with members outside the meetings, yes. Noticing and encouraging others' gifts and abilities, definite. And identifying and utilizing potential leaders, yes. So we're going to actually now unpack some of these yeses. What does this actually mean for us as small group leaders? Now, one of the things that can happen at a conference like this is you're going to get lots of ideas and maybe some ideals. And you might be just feeling a bit overwhelmed by the end of it all. Okay? I'm just kind of, maybe you are already. You're just kind of going, man, I could go home now and have enough to work on for the next year and a half. My encouragement to all of us is to take what you got today and yesterday, if you're here yesterday, and just to prayerfully discern, God, what are the priorities you'd have for my group, small group ministry of which I'm a part? And start, you know, even I'm a big one into plans. You know, what would be my plan for the rest of this year in the small group? Three things that I would like to work on in my small group. Okay, so it doesn't have to, you don't have to come away with 61 things that you're going to do in the next week, all right? But what are the two or three things that you can work on over the next few months to strengthen your small group, all right? It makes it more manageable. So these things don't matter, these demographic kind of things. For those of you who are at seminary, you might be disappointed about the educational level, but don't quit. Don't quit. No, stick with it. Personality, spiritual gifts, time devoted to lesson prep, but what matters, all these things that we just talked about. All right, so the difference between successful leaders and unsuccessful ones all relate to controllable behaviors, not to predetermined traits, like being extroverted, for example. Okay, so what the authors of the research discovered and they're trying to communicate is that we can all actually be a part of groups, lead groups that are growing. Okay. The four strategies, and now we're to the title of this small group, the four strategies for growing your small group boil down to these four things: pray, reach, care, and empower. Now what we're going to do is we're going to look at these. What does this actually mean for me as a leader practically, day to day? How can I make this work, these four strategies in my small group? So here you have your three growth outcomes that we mentioned, right? The conversion growth, seeing people accept Jesus, assimilation, people being enfolded into a small group, and groups multiply. All right, let's look at conversion growth. And in particular, the area of prayer first. How does prayer contribute to conversion growth in your small group? What they discovered is that 83% of those with a strong prayer life saw people brought to Christ in their groups in the past 9 months. That's significant. High majority of these groups saw unsaved people coming to their group because, in part, that the small group leader was a person of prayer and prayed actively, prayed earnestly. Prayer is so significant. And this was versus 19%. So, you know, if I'm weak in the area of prayer as a small group leader, it doesn't bode well that we will add new people coming to Christ. All right? Now, that's not to say that God can't still work. He does. He works through other people, and he works despite of us. But prayer in the life of the leader is absolutely critical. What does that look like? A praying leader spends consistent time with God. All right? Could be in the morning, could be in the evening. It could be throughout the day at different times, but there is this walking with the Lord, increasingly walking in the presence of God. Prayer for friends that need God. A number of years ago, I heard someone speaking about praying the blessing upon others. And he was saying, you know, the challenge was, who are five unsaved people that you know? Are you willing to pray a prayer blessing over them? Five people, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And I do this with the people in my evangelism and faith formation class and challenge them. to actually do that. And it's something that I've been doing with our neighbors for a number of years, just praying for them that God would bless them, work in their lives. And it's something that small group leaders, when they're doing, it's powerful. They desire more time with God. They want to be with Him. They want to spend that time in His presence. Prayer for their group members. All right, so they're throughout the week, they're actively thinking about their group members, committing them to prayer, and that is part of their role as a leader. And then, of course, prayer for the small group meeting itself. All right, so those are just five pretty specific examples of what a praying leader looks like. Okay, and obviously there needs to be a heart for God behind those. So why does prayer make such a difference? I think people, when they come into a group that's been soaked in prayer, I mean, it's a tangible kind of thing. It's like walking into God's presence. They know that something's different. They know that there's a dynamism here, a life that's not of the group. It's a spiritual thing. It's almost like, yeah, we feel God's presence. We sense that something is going to happen tonight, that God is going to speak into this. People sense that praying leaders care for them. You know, there's something about taking time to pray regularly for someone that builds care and concern and compassion in our hearts for them. Even if we don't like them that much, as we pray for them, our hearts begin to change. And then when we see them at care group, we're going, you know, we actually want to know how they're doing, how that issue is going that they had mentioned a couple weeks ago. People see the fruit of the Spirit in praying leaders, right? They're walking with God. And there's something powerful about that, seeing the Spirit work in somebody's life. And that becomes a difference maker, a game changer for those kinds of groups. And then praying leaders, they hear from God about their groups. As they're praying for their groups, as they're saying, Lord, what is it that you would have for us this week? As we look at this passage of Scripture, Lord, what are the questions that you would have me to ask? Or maybe, Lord, is there something we need to do differently? We're doing this study, and yet, Lord, I'm sensing in my spirit that there might be something else that you have for us this week. Lord, what would you have? What's your agenda for our group? And so they're communing with God. They're hearing about their group, and group members can sense that this is this person is not just a small group leader. This person is a spiritual leader, right? A spiritual leader. And we're all in process. I realize that. You might not feel very spiritual. Lots of times I don't either. But it's the heart. It's the heart of wanting to grow, of wanting to seek after God. And so prayer makes a huge difference. I'm going to pause here for a moment. All right? So we've been talking about prayer. Your thoughts, questions, as you think about being a praying leader. Anyone want to raise something? Yeah.
I think one of the neatest things is just tracking, just journaling.
Yeah.
Just journaling. And then I see David did that, you know, in the Psalms. And he bumped out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, appreciate that. Thank you. So the comment was related to prayer journaling, right? And how exciting it can be to see how God answers over time, and you know, and
through the group's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. As we pray for each other, you know, back then, that was 3-4 months ago, we prayed about that. Look, you know,
yeah.
This is a healing, not a miracle.
Good. Good. Right. So actually doing this as a group, you know, and seeing. Yeah, because a lot of times, you know, when we pray about something and God answers, but we've sort of lost track of the connection, right? And that's a way of keeping track.
Right.
Yeah. Appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah. Other thoughts and questions about creating this praying culture? All right. It's important, isn't it? It's critical. What about this whole area of outreach? Another one of the findings in the study was that those with a strong outreach focus, 90% of those saw at least one person brought to Christ in the past 6 months, compared to 11% in groups that didn't have that strong focus. Okay? So, I mean, it speaks to the importance of our small groups having this orientation. Now, question may come up at some point. If it doesn't, I'll address it ahead of time. You know, there's different types of groups, right? A divorce care group or a grief share group. And, you know, there's different kinds of groups, and I recognize that not all of them are necessarily bent towards having a particular kind of outreach focus. All right? So I'm aware of that. Some groups wouldn't lend themselves to this, but a lot of them would. A lot of them would. And one of the things that I shared yesterday in my workshop on house church, I was a pastor in a conventional church for a number of years, and then we did house church for a while, and now we're back into a conventional kind of church. But one of the things that we experienced in a house church, which is really just a small group that has chosen to call itself a church, and it becomes its own community that way, was this importance. You know, we had this focus on outreach. We prayed about reaching lost people, and it made a difference. You know, we would hear stories, and people would share, and we would, you know, every once in a while we would hear of somebody in our network who had accepted Christ. And so I've seen it work, and it's important. And it could be as simple as, and I mentioned this in the previous session, in your small groups, 10 minutes every time you meet devoted to what you could call witness. Right? Praying for unsaved people in our lives. And what it does is it keeps the vision alive in people's hearts that our group is concerned about lost people. And we're devoting time and energy to making that happen. Okay? To be involved in outreach. And then doing practical things to serve the unsaved people in our lives. Five I's. Investment. All right? So when we think about reaching out, members are spending time with friends in order to share Christ. That can be kind of challenging because some of us are in a Christian bubble. I work in a Christian place. I hang out with Christian people. And it just kind of goes on and on, right? Some of you do work in places that are not Christian, and that's great because you have those opportunities. One of the things that we do, we live in a townhouse complex, and you know, I try to get involved in the Strata Council because it's a way for me to just kind of keep involved with people. It forces me to stay engaged with my neighbors, and I need that kind of accountability. And so groups that are reaching out, there is this investment, and you hear stories about it. People are sharing, and if you have an opportunity each week to do that in your small group, it reinforces and affirms that this is important to us, and we want to keep doing it. Invitation, encouraging members to invite others. All right, so there's this, inviting others to group, but not just to your main meeting, because a lot of times that's a huge jump for people to go from, you know, maybe they're not Christians, and to come into a small group Bible study, wow, we've done that. And it's culture shock a lot of times. And so it may be more inviting people to a barbecue. You know, why don't you invite your friends? We're just going to have a big gathering and get to know each other, and that can be a part of it. All right, so those fun activities become a way to do that. I love the idea of neighborhood small groups, by the way. And if that interests you, the book Connecting Church 2.0 by Randy Frazee is a great book. Kind of what he did with his church, and they went to a neighborhood model where the Christians in a neighborhood would start meeting together, and their goal was to reach their neighbors. All right, so when they would do fun activities, it was just natural to invite the people around them because they lived together. You know, have a block party. We'll have a movie night with the kids out on somebody's backyard, whatever the case may be, and that becomes just a really natural way of connecting with people. Intention, outreach is a stated purpose of the group. Okay, so it's something we believe in, we talk about, we're committed to. Intercession, prayer in meetings for friends. So I mentioned that already, having a set-aside time for intercession. And then imitation, a leader who models relational outreach. So if you're a small group leader, you better be involved in people's lives outside the group. Unsaved people, if this is really important to you, and I believe it should be because it's a biblical mandate that we're involved in reaching lost people, and we're modeling it, we're communicating it, and that catches within the group as we do that in front of each other and we hear stories from one another. All right, I want you to take a moment in group, in your small groups, just to talk about this aspect of reaching out. What are your responses, reactions to it? Okay, feel free to push back on it too. That's a good thing sometimes. Another 30 seconds. All right. Why don't we come back together? like to hear from some of the groups. What did you come up with? What were some of your reactions, responses to this whole area of outreach in small groups? Okay, all right. Thanks, Spencer. So the comment was, you know, inviting people, that can be a big jump. And so having some of these intermediate steps where they get to know people in the group on a relational level can be helpful. Other comments from your groups?
Yeah. In our group, they trying to be together with those intention, clear intention to outreach to certain cultural contacts in our sport. Because our sport has a lot of Filipino community there. But interestingly, there are a lot of Filipino people there are working as a nanny.
Okay.
Job. And then they don't have really, sometimes they can't really host at their place. So some of our church people, they get together and they start to meet together with those specific intention, trying to open to the Filipino.
Okay.
And it's not just all the Filipino people. Most of them, their professional job, like professional like nurse or teachers, the local Canadian people.
Mm-hmm.
But they clearly agree with together. Focus on reaching those people.
Great.
Yeah, that makes them really growing. And not just having more Filipino people, but including more like a local Canadian people join to their group because they like that feature.
Right. Okay. Good. So the comment related to the Filipino community in Abbotsford and how people are trying to structure small groups so they can attract people in that community, especially the nannies and so forth. Yeah.
One of the things they did at the previous church we attended was they took the resources of the Christian community and presented them out. We call it Eats and Issues.
Okay.
And so we hosted a dessert and, you know, caring for elderly parents, makes blended families, you know, we brought Christian resources in. It was an opportunity, you know, to get them through the door, so they start to develop those relationships.
Okay. All right, good. So that was Eats and Issues. All right. Having food and talking about issues that would be relevant to people in the neighborhood, in the community.
We brought in family therapists, Christian therapists. We brought the church resources into the community.
So bringing the church resources into the neighborhood. Thank you. Yeah. It's great. You know, the more we can do that kind of bridge building, the better. You know, a number of churches, too, are beginning to partner with community agencies to offer help in different areas. I mean, that can be powerful. Building bridges into the community. Ministries, programs that help meet felt needs can be powerful. And so, you know, I think what we're really talking about here are ways that we can offer something of help to the people in our community. And that's another powerful approach, I think, to outreach. And, you know, it's a supplement to the personal evangelism, the personal connections that we're making. You know, I think it's important that we recognize that as important as those are, they never will be a replacement for the personal relationships that we need to develop with unsaved people. That's so important that we do that, right? And we can do that through these sort of platforms. That's what I love about that, is that, you know, as you engage with people in the community around a particular issue, let's say, you can build relationship with them, you get to know them, and see where that goes. And in a sense, it's not just building a relationship, but you're bringing Jesus closer. Right? And that's the powerful thing about relational evangelism, is that you get closer to people, they begin to see Jesus in you and are drawn to him. And that's what excites me about that particular approach to to evangelism. Okay, so we've talked about how small groups who engage in outreach, so there's an outreach culture, there's an expectation that we're reaching out to lost people, when coupled with a praying leader, and that's spreading throughout the group, the research discovered that those combinations are powerful in terms of those kinds of groups seeing people come to know Jesus. All right, now, seeing people come to know Jesus through small groups isn't the only way, we know that, but this is a small groups conference, and so so we're focusing on small groups, and in this one we're looking at how they can grow numerically through conversion growth. But now what about assimilation? That's a whole other area, right? In our churches, we're concerned because on the one hand, you have people who have been perhaps attending the church for quite some time who maybe don't feel like they belong, right? And we want them to feel like they belong. We want them to be part of a vibrant community. And people find that in different ways. Don't assume that people can only find meaningful community in small groups, okay? The key is belonging, all right? And people find belonging. They belong in different ways. You know, I don't believe that 100% of the people in your church need to be in a small group, to be quite honest with you. I think many would benefit from it. But please don't get up on Sunday morning and say, every single one of you needs to be in a small group to belong. It's not true. Some of them have small, informal small groups. Some of them are meeting for coffee, and it's not on your list of small groups, but they're still experiencing community and building into each other's lives, right? And so I think we need to keep that in mind as we think about this whole topic of assimilation. Really, the larger issue is how do we help people feel like they're part of community, okay? And a key strategy is assimilating people into small groups. But it's only one of several strategies that a church needs to employ to make sure that everyone is experiencing this loving, Christ-centered community in your church. Okay, so care. Caring for people is absolutely critical. And I'll unpack that a bit more for you. So of the groups that had strong caring relationships, 44% of them had added four or more members since starting, compared to 18% of those with weak caring relationships. I mean, it kind of makes sense, doesn't it? If you come into a group and, you know, nobody says hi to you, you know, you feel like you're kind of like dust or dirt on the bottom of someone's foot, you probably aren't going to want to come back to that group, right? And so, you know, but if you see that people are really caring for each other, and as you come in as a new person, they're caring for you, they're asking good questions, they don't let you leave without, you know, saying goodbye, and, you know, oh, man, you know, I'd love to see you again next time. Can we get together for coffee this week? You know, these are the kinds of things that communicate volumes to people when they come into our small groups. So what is a caring group? I just spent the last 75 minutes before break talking about building intimacy in your small group in the previous workshop. And so if you really want to go deeper with that and weren't here for that session, again, I would just encourage you to check out the recording when it's available, because I really did unpack it. You can pick up a book called Making Small Groups Work by Cloud and Townsend, which has just a whole bunch of great ideas for creating healthy groups and caring for one another. All right, so it's called Making Small Groups Work. It's just a good resource, and I refer to a number of key points from the book in my previous presentation. But it's a family atmosphere. We really do care for each other. We want to encourage one another and build into each other's lives. We're praying for one another throughout the week, right? This is not just a small group meeting. This is a small group, This is a family. And families, they don't care just once a week or once every 2 weeks, but they care all the time about how we're doing. And I recognize that all of our groups are in process in terms of how much we care and how much we function as a family. But hopefully we can care more for each other moving forward, supporting each other in times of need. They're responsive. They want to actually walk alongside people as they go through struggle and pain. Maybe someone is grieving over the loss of something or someone, and the group comes around that person and becomes a support for them. To support each other in times of need, having fun together. I think that's the important part of building a sense of community, that we enjoy our time together, and to spend time with one another between meetings. All right, so going out for coffee, maybe there's a mentoring relationship that develops between two members of the group. Perhaps, you know, three of the guys or three of the women decide we're going to get together for accountability, you know, and Mike Mahorder and his wife Kathy right now are presenting on accountability groups in one of the other sessions. You know, and that can happen too. We care for each other. We want to go into a micro group like that and to help each other take next steps. Caring through the stages of group life. Every group is somewhere in this small group life cycle. All right? If you just started a group, you're in this forming stage. And as you think about how do you care when a group is just starting, I mean, here you're doing fun activities. You're having lots of extra interaction time when you get together. I think it's important that small group leaders explain what's coming after this so that they're not caught off guard. And I'll share these other ones for you here in just a moment. You know, and keep the group's mission before the group. Like, what are we about as a group? All right? If we're actually concerned about reaching lost people, we need to keep that alive in front of people. Because we forget, we get busy and get sidetracked by all sorts of things. The storming phase. All right, so we're getting closer to each other. And, you know, that perfect group that you joined is no longer a perfect group. There's weird people in there, right? Including you and me. We begin to see each other a little bit more for who we are. And, you know, there's a bit of conflict happening. You're going, that person, you know, how did they let him in the group? You know, what's going on here? Why does that person always say those things in the discussion? I didn't realize she was so needy, you know, he was so needy, right? And you were always hearing stories about the need. And so in the storming phase, you actually will see some group members who go, I guess I signed up for the wrong group. And I need to revisit this. By the way, I was just visiting the group, guys. 2 months, 3 months, 6 months later, I'm going to go visit another group now and see if I can find something else. Storming. So how do we care for people when people are starting to get onto each other's nerves? I mentioned this in the previous session. One of the great things you can do is to study the one another's of Scripture. What does it actually mean to bear with one another? To carry each other's burdens. To love each other. To forgive each other. To admonish one another. Powerful study. You know, and you can spend several weeks just going through these different one another's of Scripture to help you understand what group life is all about. And that we can actually work through the storming phase and love each other more because of it. All right, and that leads to the norming stage here. People have truly bought in, and here as a leader, you want to get people involved as much as possible. All right, sometimes as leaders, we think that we were leaders for life of a particular group, you know, and it might be because we love it so much. You know, I just love being a small group leader, and, you know, I've appointed myself for life to this position. You know what? You may be robbing somebody else of the opportunity of growing into leadership by holding on too tightly. All right? I think a better approach in most cases is to, in this phase here, as you're getting to know people, you're seeing potential, you're going, all right, you know, Jason, he's got some skills. He's got a heart for Jesus. And then there's Susan, you know, I mean, she's really, you know, taking off in her walk with God. And I think she could actually help out in this area and maybe lead the prayer time. Or, you know, Jason, he's gifted in music too. And right, so you're looking and you're employing people, mobilizing people, empowering people to serve in various ways. So that needs to happen already in the norming stage. Just, you know, could be 6 to 8 months into a particular group. And then the performing stage, the group leader should be doing almost nothing here. If you've done your job well, and you're looking, you're making the most of the gifts and abilities in your group, you're encouraging and empowering, by this stage, you should have somebody who's already taking over the bulk of the leadership. And I realize there's some groups where that doesn't happen. Okay, I'm not that naive that I think that every group has this, but in most of the groups that I've been in, I've seen that this is possible, that there are people that can be encouraged and trained to take over leadership. Okay? And then the reforming would be actually sending out new leaders to start new groups. All right? And so caring in these different stages looks different, right? I kind of spent a bit of time on the forming and norming, forming and storming, rather. With norming, you're caring for people. You love them to the point where you're actually wanting them to serve, to use their gifts and abilities, and then that materializes even more later on in those stages. Well, as I mentioned, the previous breakout session, we dived even much more deeper into these issues of care. One of their key findings was that outward-focused groups actually experience more care than those who aren't. And this kind of goes against some of the thoughts about group intimacy, where we think that we need to protect our groups, that if somehow, if we're too outreach-focused, we're going to lose the intimacy and the sense of community that we're enjoying. And this study actually found the opposite to be true. Caring groups enfold more people. Will we sacrifice group intimacy if we reach out? They say if you want to experience deeper community in your small group, you should make it an open group that actively reaches out to others. So if you were in my previous workshop, think Alan Hirsch and his notion of communitas. Deep-seated community involves a mission that is beyond the group. It involves looking beyond ourselves, of having an outward focus of some kind, in order for us to experience that deep sense of community that comes when we're on mission together. And that's the notion of communitas and what this research has borne out. Can outreach and care go together? Not only can they must. They must. All right. Again, in your small groups, let's spend a bit of time just reacting to what we've talked about in terms of assimilation, okay, and the importance of care. And for those of you online, please feel free to interact with each other, even as you've been doing earlier on today. Let's take another half a minute or so in your small groups. Okay, why don't we come back together here as a large group. Any comments from the groups that you would like to share with the larger one in terms of assimilation and the importance of care in assimilating new people? Any comments that you want to share from your group discussion? Resistance is futile. Yeah, the Borg assimilation, right? Yeah. You have to be a Star Trek Next Generation fan to get that one. Yeah, the word assimilation, enfolding, is a little bit nicer. Now I'm afraid to ask for other comments after that one, but anything else? Oh, dear. Yeah, Nikki. Right. Yeah, so Nikki's comment was, you get entrenched in your group, but if you do something beyond yourself, there's something about that, you come back and there's greater cohesion and a sense of, we're in this together. Yeah. But how do you, your question at the end or your comment was, how do you get people to take that step? Right? And I think it comes back in part to, as leaders, what are we modeling? Who are we? What kind of lifestyle do we live for the kingdom, right? And if we are leading a very insulated life in terms of our contact with unsaved people, it will be hard for our people in our small groups to look up to us in that particular area. Not that we have to be perfect in everything. I'm not saying that, right? For me, I don't have tons of time because I'm in this Christian bubble, but I try to carve out some time where I'm at least interacting with unsaved people and trying to make a difference in that way. Any other comments coming out of your group discussion? All right. Well, let's look at the final piece here. And that's multiplication. Now, I've been involved in small groups for a number of years. I was a pastor overseeing small groups for quite a few years, and we kind of went through a phase where group multiplication was a huge theme in small group ministry. You need to multiply your group at all costs, right? We need to multiply. And you used to get your hand slapped if you used the word separate. You don't separate, you don't divide, but you multiply, right? And so there was this emphasis, and I think it was maybe an excessive emphasis at times. People were so focused on multiplying that, some of the other stuff got missed in the process, the building community and so forth. But I think the pendulum has probably, swung a bit maybe too far in some of our churches where we're not even talking about groups multiplying anymore. We don't have a vision for planting new groups. I mean, I'm convinced that one of the greatest ways for our reaching our communities is for us to multiply small groups into new areas, new pockets of our community, not only in neighborhoods, but in marketplaces, in workplaces, in other places. As we bring the presence of Christ into those places, Christ makes a difference. He is the light of the world, folks, right? And so, you know, I get excited about that. And I think that, multiplying small groups can be part of God's strategy for reaching our neighborhoods and our communities in a very effective way. One of my beliefs is that God is a great strategist. And as the great strategist, He has strategically placed you and me and the other Christians in our communities in workplaces and in neighborhoods so that we can reach people for Christ. And I would love to, you know, if we could somehow show the location, the geographical location of every Christian in our communities, I think we would be amazed to see how God has strategically placed people in neighborhoods. And, you know, as we as individuals and then as groups begin to claim our neighborhoods and our workplaces for Christ, we can see amazing things happen. And we haven't talked much about workplace small groups, but I hope that some of you are catching that part of the vision too, that small groups are not limited to home groups. There's a growing movement of workplace groups where somebody, you know, is working in a business office and finds another Christian, and together they start praying, and all of a sudden there's spiritual interest, and people start getting together and sharing some insights that they're gaining from Scripture. That can be really powerful. Well, empowering, leaders who empower, this research found, see their groups multiply more often. And not only is that the case, but empowering leaders actually result in groups that are better at assimilating. And as you see multiplication happen, just like I was saying, new groups starting in new neighborhoods and new workplaces, you see more people coming to know Jesus Christ. And so empowering leaders actually has an impact not only on group multiplication, but assimilation and conversion growth. One of my biggest beliefs when it comes to small group leadership is that growing leaders equals growing groups. And that's the power of God working through leaders. As you grow as a leader, so too your group will grow. And I'm not sure if that's 100% true, but I think it's mainly true that will happen. That's been the experience that I've observed in groups where there's a growing leader that just naturally translates. God is able to work through that person, and others in the group begin to grow as well. All right, so what does this mean, this whole area of empowerment? 62% of groups that had empowering leaders have multiplied or sent out new leaders, compared to 27% of groups where the leader is weak in this area of empowering others. So what does empowerment actually mean? So a leader who is empowering notices potential and talks to the person about their potential. You know, I really appreciate how you have insight into Scripture. You know, when you share something, I just really notice that you're getting down into the meaning of it. That's, you're seeing potential and you're affirming that in somebody in the group. Or, you know, it could be another person who's, you know, just has a real spirit of mercy. You know, I just really notice that, you know, when we're in ministry time and we're sharing with one another, you just have an amazing ability to empathize with people and to show mercy with them, right? And so you're looking for potential and you're talking to them about it, you're affirming them, and that's empowering when you do that, because then that person starts thinking, maybe I do. Maybe this is something I could do more. And it becomes important. Encourage members to take risk and try new things. I love challenging people beyond what they're currently doing or capable, because that's an important way of growing. I do this all the time with myself. I'm constantly jumping in over my head. I'm a risk taker a little bit that way. But I do things like organize this conference, and it's like, ay, 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 you know, what did I get myself into? This is more than I bargained for. And yet, you know, I'm growing through the process. And I think that as we do that with others, as we encourage, as we push, you know, and even though Joe may not be exactly completely 100% ready to lead a small group prayer time in your small group, maybe challenging him and saying, Joe, this next week, would you be willing to lead a group of two or three others in a prayer time? Well, you know, okay, I'll give it a try. Yeah. Right? And he does it. Maybe it doesn't go perfectly, but there's that opportunity. He's growing, and it could build some confidence and be an important part of empowering him to serve. Encourage others to get trained. That's great. You know, I mean, there's churches who have several people who have come to this particular training event, but there's all sorts of other training opportunities, isn't there? You know, and having training for prospective small group leaders, right? You know, and giving them some tools that they might be able to use in small group ministry. Meeting with leaders in training to plan. So you've identified maybe one or two people in your small group and you're going, I want to pour myself into them. And I'm going to meet separately with them to develop them, to help them grow, to do some coaching with them. All right, so did a session yesterday on three ways of growing your small group ministry. And I spent most of the time talking about coaching, how overseers of small group ministries can coach small group leaders. But all of those things that I talked about, small group leaders can do with their leaders in training and others in their group, can coach them to take the next step. And it's something that anyone can do. It's asking good questions. It's caring about people. It's being involved in their lives. And so that's an important part of it, too. Constantly looking for potential leaders. I've been doing this for decades. When I was a pastor, I started with the kids in the church. The young kids, 10, 11, and 12 primarily. Those were the areas that I looked for. But already by that age, I was starting to identify people that I wanted to challenge to serve in leadership in some capacity. And so I had kids working with me and kids programs. I had them becoming interns for me when they were a little bit older in high school. But I was identifying the kids that, and we need to have, I think, those eyes for seeing potential leaders in the groups that we're a part of. One of the practical ways of helping people take next steps, this is my challenge to you. If you're a small group leader, list the people in your group. All right, so Joe, Sarah, Charmin, whoever, Philippe, write down one idea beside each name as to how you could help them develop as leaders. Very practical thing. All right? And if you're not sure, I mean, just spend some time thinking and praying about it. Maybe ask somebody else to help you with that. But that's a way of empowering, helping people take the next steps. Well, I know you probably want to do that right now. hold off on it just for a moment, okay? I want to just talk a little bit about ways to multiply your group. Okay, so in the old days of small groups, 20 years ago, internal multiplication said, well, we're just going to divide in half, and like a cell, we're going to send half the people over here to start a new group. For a lot of people, that didn't work really well. It was a painful kind of way of multiplying. All right, but it is a way, and it sometimes is a good way. Birthing is more effective, and that's where a smaller group, maybe two people or four people in a group, they have a vision, a burden to start another group over here, and they go do it. That's a lot less traumatic than the first one. Small group planting would be another way. So a person or couple plants a group, gets it established, and then moves on, kind of like church planting. All right, the shotgun approach. A large group of 25 or 30. Okay, so this is like a big, big group in a big living room, I guess, or some other place. Multiplies into several groups. Kind of that shotgun kind of approach. All right, and they could even choose to get together periodically as a larger group. And then another way would be launching, and here you would have members from a few different groups that decide, hey, we have this mutual interest. Let's start a group over here. Okay? So that would be another way of starting a small group. So there you have it. For long-term growth, all three outcomes and all four health factors are essential. Growing groups have leaders that are connected to God and empowering others. Their members are giving themselves to one another in caring relationships and to those who don't yet know Jesus. That's the essence of what we've been talking about here today, long-term growth and how we can do it, four strategies for making it happen. Any final questions, comments that you would like to make? What I'd love for you to do, we have a few minutes, and I had hoped we would have a few minutes at the end, is to, first of all, I want to thank you for being a part of the Ministry Lift Conference, for being here, for dedicating a day or 2 days to be a part of this, for engaging in conversation. And I hope and pray and trust that this will be useful to you as you go back to your churches and your small group ministries. Keep the conversation going, all right?
Thank you for the
Oh, well, thank you. Appreciate that. What I'd like you to do just at the end here is to in your small groups again, just share one or two things that you want to take away from this conference. All right? So it could be something from this morning's sessions or this afternoon or yesterday, whatever. And then would you just pray a prayer blessing? Those of you who are comfortable praying in your small group, just take a moment to pray for each other, and that will be the conclusion of our conference. All right, so why don't we do that as our finale, praying, sharing and praying together.
Try it.